Now, I mentioned a few minutes ago those first ordinations. And in the course of the day on which the public ordinations were given, 18 years ago, I remember, but actually, to be quite truthful, I don't remember. I had to consult my notes. I gave two talks, and the first of these talks was on the Upasaka ordination and the Western Buddhist order. The other was on the Bodhisattva vow, interestingly enough. But in the first of these talks, I referred to four grades of ordination. Because this was the way in which we were thinking in those days. So perhaps it may be of interest to some of you to hear about those. In the course of this talk or this lecture, I spoke of, first of all, the Upasaka and Upasika, that being the feminine gender, ordination. And then I spoke about the Maha Upasaka or Maha Upasika ordination, about the Bodhisattva ordination and the Bhikshu ordination. These being the traditional ordinations, you might say. And at that time, we thought in terms of having an order, having a sangha, in which you, as it were, moved up through these different grades. We thought like that, or I thought like that, only for a while. Later on, we changed that. In fact, we changed it quite soon as a result of our own growing and deepening experience of the real meaning of spiritual community, the real meaning of going for refuge, the real meaning of having a sangha. What we felt, and what I especially felt, was that the central thing, the main thing in Buddhism, was going for refuge. Going for refuge to the Buddha, going for refuge to the Dharma, going for refuge to the sangha. That was the absolutely central act that made one a Buddhist. Everything else was secondary, whether you were a monk or a layman, a nun or a lay woman, whether you were living in the forest alone, or whether you were living at home with your wife and your family, that was all secondary. The main thing was that you went for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. So the spiritual community consisted of all those who went for refuge in this way, to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. That was the most important thing that anybody could do in the course of his or her own life. So, as the months and the years went by, the going for refuge seems to us to be of such overwhelming significance that one could only really speak in terms of one ordination, that one occasion on which you committed yourself to the Buddha as the ultimate spiritual teacher, the Dharma as his teaching of the path to enlightenment, and the Sangha, the spiritual community of his followers, those who are treading that path. That seems to be the main thing. That seems to be what Buddhism was all about. So there was no question of grades of ordination, really. There was no question of a lower ordination and a higher ordination. There was just ordination. There was just going for refuge to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. But though there may not have been different grades, there were different levels, and this is also something that we discovered quite soon, because you can go for refuge with more or less energy, more or less force, more or less conviction, more or less experience, both mundane and spiritual. So we came to distinguish, in the one going for refuge, different levels. And in particular, we came to distinguish between what I've called effective going for refuge and real going for refuge. So what does one mean by effective going for refuge? Effective going for refuge means when you, not being enlightened, but wishing to become enlightened, wishing to follow the path of the Buddha, with total sincerity, dedicate yourself, commit yourself to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. As fully as you possibly can. Wishing to make the Buddha, Dharma and Sangha absolutely central in your life. Wishing to place them, as we often say, in the very center of your mandala. This is effective going for refuge. But inasmuch as you're not enlightened, and not even in a sense really on the path to enlightenment, not the higher path, you can slip back. If you're not careful, you can withdraw. And in the very early days of the FWBO, in the very early days of the Western Buddhist Order, some people did withdraw. Many people did withdraw. They found it rather too much. They found that they'd bitten off, to use the familiar idiom, rather more than they could choose. I've mentioned that on the occasion of that first public ordination ceremony, 12 people were ordained. Well, most of them didn't last for more than a couple of years. And there is, in fact, only one who is now still effectively with us, and that is Ananda, who is the only person who can share with me, therefore, 19-year memories of the FWBO and the WBO. Another who stayed with us, in a sense, all the course, because he stayed right up until the time of his death, just 3 or 4 years ago, was Vangisa. And it was really a great blow, you know, to the whole movement, and especially to the order, when we lost Vangisa. And I was in Crete at the time, and I received the news quite late, about a week after he actually died. Now I can remember, receiving the news, receiving the cable, and I can remember, how I felt, thinking of Vangisa. Because Vangisa was one of those who was coming along, to my lectures at the Hampstead Buddhist Vihara. He was a member of the Sangha Association. And, when the Sangha Trust decided they didn't want me back, well, he was one of those who followed me into the FWBO. In fact, who helped to set up the FWBO. And he was with us, and very much with us, despite all sorts of personal difficulties and illness and so on. Right up until almost the hour of his death. I think he took his last class, his last meditation class, perhaps, just a few hours before he died. So many were not able to maintain that original commitment. And yes, of that original 12, only Ananda is still effectively with us. But of course, as the years went by, that sort of thing became less and less likely. Because the movement as a whole, the order as a whole, became stronger and stronger, and more support was able to be given to those who were having difficulties in their spiritual life, difficulties in following the spiritual path. So effective ordination is ordination which, or effective going for refuge, is going for refuge which, though utterly sincere at the time, is nonetheless not permanent, inasmuch as insight has not arisen, transcendental experience has not arisen. You can still slip back. Obviously, most order members are still in that position, and most order members, therefore, need to be very careful. What we speak of mitras, and friends who are just beginning to set their foot upon the path. But real going for refuge is that going for refuge which you experience after you have entered the stream. I'm not going to say a lot about entering the stream. In fact, I'm not really going to say anything. It's a subject on which I've touched many, many times before. If anyone is especially interested, well, there is my lecture now published as a booklet on going for refuge, where I distinguish, in fact, 4 different levels of going for refuge. But once one has gone for refuge effectively, one's aim and object must be to go for refuge in what I call the real sense. That is to say, the sense in which you can no longer not go for refuge, because insight has arisen into the true nature of existence, and you can no longer fall back. You can only go forward. You've passed what we call the point of no return. So though we don't have any more grades of ordination, we've only got one ordination, the ordination for everybody. And though we attach supreme importance and significance to that, there are these different levels of going for refuge, and especially the level of effective going for refuge, from which you can fall back or fall away, and real going for refuge, back from which or away from which you cannot possibly fall. But though we don't really have grades of ordination within the order anymore, though we've just got this one ordination, what we call now the Dharmachari ordination, or in the case of women, Dharmacharini ordination, there is, one might say, still some trace of these grades in an informal sort of way. We sometimes speak of senior and responsible order members. But we might even say, well, we've had three or four senior and responsible order members on the platform this afternoon. They, one might say, very roughly correspond to the Maha Upasakas and Maha Upasikas, but not in any sort of formal way or formal sense. And then, of course, we've also got Anagarikas, those who change one of the precepts, one of the 10 precepts taken by all Dhammacharis and Dhammacharinis, change it from abstention from sexual misconduct to abstention from non-celibacy. In other words, they take a precept of chastity. There aren't many of those in the order, but I hope that before long there will be a few more. So they, one might say, in a sense, correspond to bhikshus and bhikshunis. But then, what about the other ordination I mentioned, the other traditional Buddhist ordination, the bodhisattva ordination? Well, this isn't really, and shouldn't really be considered as, a separate ordination at all. The bodhisattva ordination really represents the altruistic aspect of the going for refuge itself. You go for refuge, not just for your own sake, but for the sake of all. You go for refuge, you seek to attain enlightenment, not for the sake of a personal gratification for yourself, but so that you can be a greater service, greater use to other people. In fact, more than that, you see that you can't really separate your own personal development from that of other people. That one can't really adopt a purely self-regarding attitude to the spiritual life. There is a self-regarding attitude or aspect, but there's also an other-regarding attitude or aspect. And these two have to be combined in the Buddhist spiritual life. You are trying to develop yourself, but you're trying to develop in association, in contact with other people. You can't really separate yourself from other people and devote yourself exclusively to your own spiritual development and welfare. The other regarding and the self-regarding aspects of spiritual life go together. So one might regard the going for refuge, to use that nomenclature, as representing the self-regarding aspect, but one might say that the bodhisattva ordination and the bodhisattva vow represent the other regarding aspect, or even the other regarding aspect of the going for refuge itself. This may be a little obscure, but this also is spelled out in the booklet which I mentioned earlier, so I can perhaps refer you to that.